like do 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 hi.
All right, should we talk about the book? I reckon we cover part 3 and 4.
Let's do it.
Rich, do you want to give one of your brief summaries?
I'd love to. Here's one I prepared earlier. After 2 years of intellectual labors, Larry goes to work in a coal mine where he meets Kosti, a Polish nobleman in exile. The pair go rambling through Western Europe, ultimately staying on at a farm in Germany to work over the summer. Meanwhile, Isabel and Gray are married. It's the roaring 20s in full swing. Elliot makes a packet on the stock market and buys a place on the Riviera, starts entertaining in grand style. Then eventually we get the great stock market crash of 1929, which spares Elliot, who has converted his stock into gold, but ruins Gray and his father and plunges Europe and America into the Great Depression. Elliot installs Henry and Isabel in his apartment in Paris, and the whole gang gets reconciled with Larry after about 10 years. Larry initially looked like a bum. He spent 5 years in India, including a couple of years studying under a guru in an ashram. Larry cures Gray's migraines. We meet Suzanne, the artist and professional mistress, who recounts the story of how Larry saved her when she was at her lowest point. And I think that's where we end up. That's the meat of it. If we're not going to do part five.
Yeah, I think the only thing you missed is he kind of healed the headache of Gray.
No, I actually did say that, didn't I?
Oh, did
Yeah.
I wasn't listening.
Fair enough.
I tuned out for those
You're
45
staring at
seconds.
your face in the Zoom selfie. You already
Trying to figure out how to get
set
it back.
it back on. God, I look good.
Did you say that? I think I also missed that. I don't think I
maybe
said
I
it back.
didn't. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all good.
He cures Gray's terrible
It's
migraines using some kind of oriental trick.
Richard jumps in for another 30 seconds.
Oh,
Explain the
I'll just do the synopsis again. I'll take two.
migraines. Nice.
Yeah. What do you guys want to talk about this time?
I mean, I'd be keen in general to talk about Larry's aloofness to his friends and family in some sense, right? So I think we were introduced originally to this young man who's obviously searching for knowledge and to not be sort of grandiose about it, something like the meaning of life, right? He's obviously discontent with sort of just living by the status quo and being an American, getting a job and doing the things that are expected of him. So he goes in search of knowledge and does all this stuff. And I think that was really attractive to me in particular, but to all three of us. And I think, you feel identified with him to some extent. But then as the book goes on, right, he's getting older, he continues to travel. You get the sense that while you're with him in person, yes, he's sort of delightful to be around. He's all smiles, he's very charming. But he has chosen to live this sort of life where he's constantly on the move. He's unreliable in the sense that he could disappear out of your life at any moment, and everyone sort of knows that, right? I think Isabel describes it Yeah.
as trying
And
to
then he
catch
just
smoke with
randomly
your
shows
hands,
up.
right? So yeah, it's nice when he's around, but he randomly shows up, he randomly leaves. It still feels like he's hasn't per perhaps found what he's looking for, or at least maybe not, that's not the right thing to say, but he's just wedded to this life where he's constantly moving, constantly searching. I think that can be fine, but you start to see an element of selfishness in it as the book goes on, right? Because he's got all these people that care about him in France and around the world, and they would like to see him, they would like to spend more time with him, and he sort of makes that impossible. And also, it seems like his life experiences have now diverged to such an extent with other people who are used to sort of a more normal existence that he has a bit of a hard time relating to them, right? Like, I think Mogum is the Mogum. Mom is the narrator.
That's the new name.
Yeah. Mom is the narrator. And I think Isabel at some point just sort of stresses that, yeah, while he's nice to be around, there's a bit of an emotional gap, perhaps is the right way to describe it, between him and whoever he's talking to. So yeah, I'm just curious what you got. Like, I'm a little less perhaps impressed by Larry, or a little less. I think when the first and second part of the book ended, I sort of wanted to be Larry. He's my idol. He's just reading all the time. He's forsaken various societal norms to actually pursue what he thinks is very valuable. And now the fact that he's continued to do that as like an older, not that he's old yet, right? I think he's early 30s at this point in the book.
Or at least when they sort of reunite with him when
He's
he's
our
about their
age,
age.
roughly,
And
which is
yeah,
nice
he's
to sort of put it in our
yeah, exactly.
context.
27.
Yeah,
Hey, you guys are old as fuck. I still got time.
thanks, man.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess that's just a long-winded way of asking, like, what are your thoughts of Larry now after these last two parts,
I
did
totally
that
agree.
change?
I think it's always kind of been there. There's this tension between him doing something, fairly noble, fairly appealing for people like us, and hard to do, so brave and just difficult to keep going. But then, and a lot of that's quite redeeming, depending what it is. Like, if you just go bum around, it's obviously not redeeming. But like, since he's reading Descartes, it kind of is. Getting into the Eastern spiritual side can be redeeming. Becomes too woo, which I Wait, are we parting ways with Larry because he goes from the Western tradition to the Eastern
no,
tradition?
no, no, no. I'm saying like getting into the Eastern tradition is good, but like, Larry kind of did what Sam Harris did in his 20s, right? And Sam Harris had some fuck you money, like trust fund. His mum created Golden Girls. He just went for 10 years to the East and learned it all. And he'd probably it's probably the most important thing he ever did, even for his career to this day. But there's a risk of people going too woo, right? And I think Morm, I mean, we'll talk about it later. Morm probably is sympathetic to some levels of woo that I probably get off earlier, like curing headaches and shit. Yeah, so like, I suppose I'm just saying, like, depending on what you're doing, it can be quite redeeming. What Larry is doing is very redeeming, but even that, there's this tension between obligations to, I mean, he doesn't have kids and a wife, but I mean, he's essentially left a wife, got family and just friends, and just all the kind of the boring, steady stuff, which is also redeeming if you do that well, and you can get a lot out of, as we kind of talk to the difference between sort of building and loafing. I mean, I relate to Larry. Like, all I kind of want to do is read and learn stuff, and it's a problem in my personal development life that I don't want to redirect it to building stuff. I just would rather read. Even like, I mean, I'm on the work clock at the moment, right? Like, Don't admit it. Cut it out.
cut it out.
Yes. I mean, yeah, one thing to emphasize maybe is that he's still a very caring person, right? And we see that
It's nice.
in his
Yeah, it's a nice guy.
interactions with Suzanne when she's down on her luck and he invites her and her kid, they have nowhere else to go, to come basically spend the summer or whatever it was with him in some home. And he pays for them. Pays for their food, and when he leaves, gives her a bunch of money so she can get back on her feet. So it's not as if he's an uncaring person, but he does refuse to have sort of long-standing
Yeah, I agree.
relationships. He
There's a
refuses to be
selfishness.
like part of a community for a significant amount of time. Yeah, it's hard to there's an element of selfishness there, I think.
And it's also kind of brave sometimes to know you're kind of shirking the social responsibility or the social, even the social etiquette in a kind of micro short-term sense, and just be like, oh no, I'll walk home by myself rather than like with the group. And you go do that, and everyone's kind of like, oh, like, what the fuck? And you just go do it. You're comfortable in yourself, and it's important enough. And like, there's an element of selfishness. Like, I'd rather just walk home by myself than like make small talk with this person or whatever it is. But there's also this kind of bravery of like, yeah, I'll willingly be the weird guy. Yeah. I still think the Larry that's being described to us is pretty hard to imagine as a real person if it wasn't on the page where like everyone still loves Larry, even though they have some slight reservations about him. But he is disinterested and aloof, and they all know it. He's described as he never says anything witty or interesting in conversation. He's not bringing any like emotional warmth or closeness. So I'm kind of wondering, like, what is it that he's supposed, what is this magical element that he's supposedly bringing to the group dynamic now? And I was thinking also where I part ways with him is so he goes on this big journey of discovery. For me, I'd be so excited to talk about what I've learned and sort of bandy ideas around and maybe like share anything that could be useful to other people in particular. Not necessarily to evangelize, but just to like be seen by them and see and, you know, see if they can relate somewhat. But he's the most obtuse motherfucker in kind of a way that I find really annoying, where they're like, oh my God, you were in India for 5 years? What did you do? And he's like, oh, you know, this and that. Or like some incredibly annoying, like deflecting response where he won't like volunteer anything. And then they dig deep enough, he eventually talks a little bit about the ashram and stuff, but he's so secretive. I think it strains a little bit of like how we're supposed to still see him as this beautiful golden boy who's such a pleasure to be around when he's like very, not cold, but like it seems like he is cold
Aloof.
in every way, but
Yeah.
they accept that the author claims he isn't. So it must be to do with this like physical body language or something, which is kind of a cheat when it's a book.
To defend a little bit, like
And he's hot as fuck, you know,
not
got those golden forearms and
I forget, was that in part five? Or was that, is that
the golden
when
hairs on his
Isabel like
forearm?
loses her mind over
And
his
Isabel's
forearm?
like, give me a cigarette. I need a cylindrical object in my mouth, stat.
Who were their broke husband and two young kids? Just thinking
So
about the
funny.
guy that got away.
I think she's described as like a bitch in heat or something.
Yeah.
Crazy. Man. I wish my forearms had that power over a woman.
I know.
And I've got not bad forearms, you know? I bet you Benny's got nice forearms. Climber forearms. Can we get a little glimpse?
Huge.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Vascular. Yeah.
Honestly, I actually can't see anything is the issue, so I don't know if you can even see them.
You just got to get the
Benny's just
gold. You got to get the
tense in
golden tan.
his glasses trying to yeah. Given the back shot. To defend Larry like not talking about his trips a little bit. It kind of depends what he's doing. Like he goes somewhere and just like reads Descartes for a week, let's say. Like I kind of like even now, this is a useful example. It's been like Easter for 4 days. You get back to work, everyone asks what you did. Like, I didn't go anywhere. But there's all these like socially acceptable things to talk about. You're like, oh, I went to this place and it was sort of lovely. No, it was great. Or it went and but like what if you just literally spend like the last 4 days like reading some like dense, you know, it's written Descartes for the last 4 days. And like for if I was talking to you guys, I was talking to the less wrong people I met. You know, they'd love it. Anyway, this is what these are the things I learned from this interesting blog or book. But just with normies, you're kind of like, and Larry doesn't feel like he's better than them either. He's just like, oh, like, he's just not going to talk about it.
Okay, but he went to fucking India. He
Yeah,
went
that
to
is.
strange lands and had crazy
But he
experiences
was
and
doing
stuff.
some buzzy
That's
shit, though.
interesting to anyone.
Yeah. I suppose part of him is hard to relate to people as well. Hard to demonstrate what he got from it if you haven't done the last, like, 5 years, like, milking a goat, like with a Indian Maji or something.
But don't you think it's
Yeah,
patronizing to be like, it's kind of like newly
it is a
enlightened
bit.
people or something, and they're like, you
Yeah,
wouldn't
exactly.
understand, so I'm not even going to bother to try and give you the slightest morsel or something. Like, it's pretty annoying, I think, be like,
Yeah.
to just immediately assume that people couldn't possibly be interested or not try and connect with people. I think is like, these are your good friends who you haven't seen in 10 years. They're so excited to see you and hear what you've been up to, and you're just like, you're deliberately being obtuse about the very thing that you know would give them pleasure, is to like hear about who you are and what you've been doing. And it feels like a super evasive kind of stinginess or something, refusing to share your about your journey that you're on.
Yeah, I agree. It's like not taking their friendship seriously in some sense. Does he refuse not to
Yeah.
share it?
Well, he doesn't in the end, but only under the onslaught of their questions, right? And even then, like with the when he cures Gray's headache and they want to talk to him about it, and he just like refuses to talk about it and wants to shut down the conversation and pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah, so just because we're on the headache,
Yeah, let's
so
talk about
yeah.
that.
So Gray doesn't want to meet them because he's got this Isabel's husband, because he's got the searing headache, and then like they go and check him out, and Larry does, you know, the rain dance or something, and cures it, and everyone's like, oh my God, wow, and then but then he sort of talks about it was actually you, Gray, that cured it, like the way you think about it. My initial take was like the author himself is sympathetic to Eastern mysticism. And kind of thinks you can probably fix things like this with this style of thing, and like maybe just limited headaches. Maybe headaches are hugely psychosomatic, so they're quite.
Important to note where these particular headaches came from. They're brought on by stress from losing his brokerage and all of his money and his clients' money. So they are like, I mean,
Yeah, no, that's important.
all of these kind of things are difficult to track the causality of, but these are like especially likely to be, in some sense, psychosomatic or like have a psychological root to them.
Yeah, so I sound a bit like sort of new atheisty kind of scientistic or scientism sort of like don't do the Eastern medicine, like that doesn't work. But a part of me is thinking like, yeah, like not sure if that would have worked, or if it did, like and maybe that's the point. It's just it can be kind of placebo-esque, but like we'll see how impressive the feats get. Like it's almost I wouldn't be surprised if the author and Larry thinks they can cure cancer. And like I met people that have gone meet some guru in a fucking cave who thinks they can cure cancer, and these people believe this guy. It's like
Yeah, I'm sort of withholding judgment on that part of the book, to be honest. I'm not entirely
We'll
sure
see where it goes.
what to make of it yet. Yeah, like is mom actually endorsing these sort of techniques? Is it just because Gray is super stressed and Larry at bottom what he's doing is just, some sort of mindfulness practice and Gray's becoming less stressed? Or, is there something actually magical or something going on?
This is all plausible, though, right? He's hypnotizing him. We know that the root cause of the problem is psychological. It doesn't seem like it needs to be supernatural. I didn't think of it like that at all. But yeah, if he starts performing a bunch of miracles, then that's gonna like that'll definitely recast that event for me. But I was just reading it as like a kind of a the useful, valid kind of Eastern mysticism, because he's been
No, it definitely could be
meditating,
that.
which is the other, big secular ritual that people have taken from the Eastern side of things that is like validated today, or at least people seem to think that it is, and just suggestibility of the mind and so on.
So speaking of like combining religions was when Larry was traveling with Costi doing manual labor, and Costi turns out to be quite smart but also quite reticent around how smart he is, and he'd read a bunch of like Christian mystics, and I just kind of googled some of those names. So one of them's like Meister Eckhart, who I think's like 1200s Christian, and he's pretty obscure, and he was kind of known as a heretic at the time, kind of rediscovered 500 years later, and he seems quite like almost the same teaching as Buddhism or Hinduism, of this kind of like universe is like one sort of thing, like consciousness is everything. And it turned out Schopenhauer actually read this guy, and Schopenhauer was really influenced by started getting really influenced by Eastern stuff, and he even just said that this Meister Eckhart guy is like the same as Buddhism. He said the only difference is Meister Eckhart has to dress the shit up in Christianity and kind of like sanitizes it a bit. And so Schopenhauer read what was it called, the Upanishad? I won't be able to say it.
Upanishads.
Which is like the founding Hinduism stuff, which the quote Razor's Edge comes from. And he just said like that changed his life, and then he saw Eckhart and that. Anyway, so and then I kind of looked at the other two names, and then the other two old Christians. The one's Plotinus, who's famous for Neoplatonism, and I think this sort of thing was there as well.
Wait, is there a guy called Plotinus who's a Platonist? Nice.
The new Platonist is Plotinus.
It's like coming up with his name. Pluto.
Yeah. Pluto the dog is, you can see a discernible thread through them.
It's a direct through line.
So what am I saying? It's just kind of interesting that you had these old Christians that were probably independently saying similar things, that didn't have as much influence as the founders of Buddhism and Hinduism, obviously. But then also just for people like Morm, Mogam, and Larry getting into the sort of window into it, you can kind of reconcile with some of these other thinkers and understand it through that lens. It's kind of different for our generation because we kind of grew up when now secularism was kind of picking and choosing and being syncretic about the Eastern traditions. That so it's part of a lot of it's part of the water, right, with mindfulness and other things. And I think Morm, and I think we mentioned last time, very similar to Hermann Hesse, of just kind of seeing there's a lot of interesting stuff there in the East and stuff. And it kind of was proto, it was before like the Beatnik generation, the Malarkey poem and
they kind of got into it as well. In a way, it was a bit, prescient's the wrong word, but they were kind of early to realize that there was a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, nice. What do we make of Kosuke, by the way? He's been an interesting character. Like, what's he representative of in Larry's life? What does he represent in the book? Did he influence Larry in any way? Or did Larry just find him to be an interesting and adequate travel
I mainly
companion?
just
And then.
took it was like a kind of like a buddy film almost. It reminded me of Mice and Men and stuff like that. You're just going around laboring and it's like this sort of, and labor itself, like the hard work being itself quite sort of a way to enlightenment and potentially redeeming. Other than that, I didn't take, yeah, I mean, you go, Rich. I've
Oh
talked
no, I
enough.
don't have that much to say. I really liked that part of the book. I enjoyed the character of Kosti, and it was kind of like, yeah, almost like a, you can imagine them visually would make quite a pair, right? And they describe the way that Kosti is described as like this great white slug when he's got his shirt off. He's like this, his fists are like anvil hammers or something, and he just gets drunk and starts spouting mysticism. And then when you ask him about it in the morning, he's like, shut the fuck up. Like, I'm saying nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do we think that was about? That's such an interesting
So what
characteristic.
do we know? Like he's a nobleman who is in exile.
A
He's
former nobleman, yeah.
fallen from great heights. He's very well educated, but doing manual labor. The contrast with Larry is that Larry is there of his own volition, and he's not resentful of his position at all. He's like seeking it out intentionally. Whereas Kosti is there presumably because that's just what life is like for him now. But he's been thrust into that situation. I guess he's mad about it.
Yeah. There was a funny detail that he only reads the newspaper and detective stories, but he's
Yeah.
obviously this smart guy and his wisdom comes out like late at night sometimes. But yeah, maybe it's that he feels constrained and he says like, or he's kind of moved on from that stuff. And he's like, oh, fuck all that stuff. I just want to read like a pulpy detective novel now and do my job. And
But he can't
like,
help relapsing at night, but it's
yeah, like this drunken
It's
student in
cope. It's
philosophy.
cope, right? He's like, I read that book when I was 12. It sucks or something. That's what he says to Larry, for the first time he meets him. He's like, yeah, I just read the
Okay.
newspaper.
So maybe one way to think about him as so Elliot, in some sense, is a foil to Larry, right? Cares
Yeah.
about completely a completely different set of values than Larry does. But I think Kosti also is Larry's foil in the sense that he explored this
He
intellectual
was the
life
Larry
earlier
when he was
in
14. Yeah.
his life, yeah, and now has totally rejected it and is put in this life not out of choice and is now trying to reject all his earlier
There's an
learnings in
aspect of
philosophy and
human
stuff.
nature, like when you've like done that journey, and then you see someone doing it, you're a little bit, you feel above it, or you're a little bit dismissive of it, and you're like, and it's almost like that Good Will Hunting scene, like when there's that guy in the pretentious guy in the bar trying to dunk on Ben Affleck, and Matt Damon comes in, and it's like, you're gonna read Friedman now, and you're gonna read the, and you kind of know it all,
Of
and
course,
you
that's
might be
your
right,
contention.
yeah. And you might be right as well, but there's kind of an ugliness that can come out of it. Like, and I see it as well, and people that maybe just getting into some quite accessible public intellectual that maybe I got into a while ago, and whether it's David Deutsch that we got into now, or like the New Atheist phase, or some culture war thing, and you kind of see them, and you can be quite down on it because it's all so predictable what they're into. So maybe there's a little bit of that, which I think is kind of this natural part of human nature. But it's interesting as a foil because like what he's just doing labor as well, which is like it's not about his choice. But it'd be different if he kind of went through the kind of the phase quote and then have this kind of more impressive job or like steady family, which he's getting a lot of meaning and joy from. But he doesn't seem to be getting that either, because I think that would be probably a true foil. Someone who's getting some of the stuff that Larry's deriving, some of the meaning, as well as some of the meaning that Larry's not.
Yeah, he's a drunk, right? He doesn't really have pleasures in life, but he drinks pretty hard and likes to cheat at
I mean, maybe
cards.
it's just that. Yeah, the polls in literature always cheat at cards. But maybe it's just, just this interesting guy you meet when you go and mix it with different types of activities, who's like this strong kind of religious, kind of not guy who's a bit wise and that you can learn from. Kind of like the infinite jest quote that you can learn from all types of people, even people you sort of look down on or are different to you. Is that's very banal and cliched. But you know when you talk to people that have a lot of stories, they've done a lot of traveling, and like there's always these interesting guys that they or girls that they run into, and maybe it's just that it's just meant to represent that. It's like some odd Polish guy who's kind of interesting.
I think it is something to do with his being cynical, preventing him from accessing the whatever actual interesting truths he has stumbled across, right? And so they only come out when he's drunk and feels totally unselfconscious to talk about it. But he's so hardened and cynical that he can't just like be real the rest of the time. I think maybe that's meant to be his the trap that he is in. Oh, that assumes that the Christian mysticism is actually something that's worth following or engaging in.
It seems like it potentially caused Larry to get into the Eastern stuff. Costi talking about these thinkers, Meistercard, and then Larry maybe checking those out and then realizing there's a lot of wisdom in the Eastern tradition.
Yeah, I think it would be cool to like note down every name of an actual source or author or letter or whatever that's mentioned and try and trace Larry's intellectual journey. Just because, unfortunately for me, like I don't really know any of these references just about. There's like very few names that I recognize. So I don't know.
William James was a very famous psychologist, Rich.
Yeah, that's where I got off the train.
Yeah. Page 10, Principal Psychology. But yeah, if this was like a bigger, better book, you'd have nerds kind of doing that, I suppose.
That's our job.
Yeah.
I got one thing that I'll mention now, which is so Suzanne recounts that while she was with him, he would make her read the parts and plays and stuff, and she said that she was sort of, you know, being self-deprecating about her own education, and she's mentioning that he was reading highfalutin people like the Duchess of blah 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 and Henry Saint-Simon. And Saint-Simon is interesting, I think, and kind of relevant that so he's like an early inspiration for Marx and various other economic thinkers who are basically just conceiving of class structures and the economy as something that you can address with science or with like cyclical type narratives, you know, Hegelian type
Is the first
narratives.
historicist.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he's in a histo exactly. But
Oh,
anyway,
wow. Wait, sorry, what's the name?
Henry
Saint
Saint-Simon,
de
Henry with an
Saint
I.
Simon.
I
Saint
guess he's
Simon.
French.
Henri de Saint Simon. Okay, anyway, sorry. Continue.
And so I think his, I mean, I don't know much about him, but his philosophy seems to be government should more or less get out of the way and let things happen, except the primary threat to the needs of the industrial class is the idling class, which is a tier of society, including able-bodied persons, who, instead of using their labor to benefit the social and economic order, prefer a parasitic life of work avoidance. That was
Okay.
kind of a funny thing. So I wonder if, so you know, like as in Larry is engaging with perhaps his critics as well, or
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah, nice.
yeah, he's not just drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
To me, it's like, I keep thinking of when I hear stories of pulling the Larry. It's just that hard to identify and hard balance to strike when you're doing it, of like how much of the Kool-Aid are you drinking, and whether and like how sort of redeeming it is. And I think in terms of the intellectual journey, it does kind of matter that like he got really into some of the best of the Western tradition as well. Like there's value there, and you talk sen and you potentially can talk sensibly about that, and you're like when you're chimping out about society or about the meaning of life, like you want to be wise and non-ignorant, and someone who totally rejects all this. Like to take them seriously, they need to be making sensible points and rejecting the totally rejecting like the Western canon or and things like that. It's like it's not a very reliable indicator of likely going to be sensible.
Yeah, they need to come like coming from a materialist background, right? Was this
Yeah.
critique geared at, Ken?
No, it was more like back to I'm not sure if we ever talked about it, but just like whether Larry is like a role model. Or like what
I
he's
see.
doing is routine, or like just when you run into someone who's like Larry.
If they're talking about Eastern ideas, you can take them more seriously if you know they've actually engaged seriously with like Western materialism and
I see, I see.
Yeah,
That's a good point.
and even just like yeah, if the I suppose I'm saying my bias is just towards deeply reading and studying. That might also include meditation. It's easy to get into woo stuff when you want to reject. Like even did you guys see the blonde girl who's like rapping, and she's got tattoos and like naughty hair and like dresses up all green. You guys seen that going viral?
No.
Just me. But it's like, and she's
Yeah, I'm
like,
deeply reading on Twitter. That's what
yeah.
she's doing.
But like she goes to South America, drinks some ayahuasca, and like just totally has lost her mind. And there's a risk for like turbo normies to like go do that. And I was like dealing with some pretty heavy shit there. And she'd be like, yeah, I just need to get in touch with my something, not really realizing what they're doing. And she was just an idiot. Right. So I suppose what I'm saying is someone goes and does all that and then they're just an idiot. It's like the reason I like Larry is because he doesn't seem like an idiot. And he seems potentially wise and well read. Not just someone who doesn't wash and lives in the jungle, right? Like some Westerner. And to extract the meaning and the value from like rejecting a normal life. Yeah, I kind of expect that from someone. I don't know if what I'm saying is making any sense, to be honest.
The brunt of it makes sense. I think the richest summary was good. Just read
Leave the
about
blonde girl.
just
You should check out that blonde girl, man.
should yeah I check out a lot of blonde girls. So
That's
sounds
the
like a good.
ultimate question of would or would not.
What should I
That girl.
Google to find this girl? Blonde girl, green and green? What did you say? It's not very specific.
Blonde girl, green tattoos.
Did you say she's a rapper?
No, yeah, she's making music. She's making like bank on SoundCloud or OnlyFans or both. She's like believes in aliens and but you see old photos of her, she's really normal. I don't know her name. I just saw her on Twitter.
Saint Simon tried to commit suicide. He shot himself 6 times in the head and
What?
only lost sight in one eye.
The hell was he shooting himself
Stop
with?
believing in God then, man.
Fucking pellet gun?
That's like some 50 Cent shit.
That's unbelievable.
This guy's got the worst aim in the Come on.
But he shot himself in the head 6 times. So unreal.
I think that's attention-seeking behavior.
Wow.
That's a cry for help.
I can't find the girl because I think I was too embarrassed of like liking.
Just
Just
check
bookmark it, dude.
your
You should go to
Twitter
bookmark stuff like that.
bookmarks.
Oh no, this I'm literally done running. But it doesn't look like it. Yeah, cut that bit out, Rush. Okay, so do you guys think if you read this when you were 18 or 20, you would have viewed it differently as you are now? Part of me thinks I would have been like super inspired and just like best book ever, and I want to potentially redirect my life to emulate Larry.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case for me. I've had this realization that is semi-related in the last few years that there's a huge trade-off, and this is going to sound obvious in hindsight, obviously, but is hard to recognize when you're growing up, that there's a big trade-off between a life where you're constantly pursuing, in my case, sort of like academic endeavors, but whatever endeavors they happen to be, whether you want to, become the best engineer, whatever you can. You're moving around for schools and for jobs and chasing opportunities, et cetera. There's a big trade-off between a life like that where you're moving around a lot and the sort of life where you just stay in one community for most of your life and have really, really deep roots. And I've come to view this as sort of a social, not socially conservative in the sense of people's like sexual behaviors or anything, but just a more
Yeah,
conservative leaning
this.
view about the importance of family and community to your well-being, as opposed to a sort of more perhaps elitist liberal mentality of, like go chase dreams across the world and go travel and go live various different places. And I think I had a lot of encouragement in that sort of direction growing up. And that's not precisely Larry's motivation either, but it, his choices also lead him to this life where he's traveling around constantly and seeking opportunities. And he refuses to stay in one place for a long time. And I'm really coming to see the trade-off of that sort of lifestyle as I grow older. And that's not to say that, I regret the kind of life I've lived, but I tend to move around every few years, and there's just there's both pros and cons. Like, you meet a lot of new people, you do a lot of new things, and that's great. But you also don't have the opportunity to just lay down really deep roots in one sort of community. And so I think, yeah, at 20 years old, I would have taken Larry's sort of lifestyle as unequivocally good. And he would have been a positive role model. I would have said, yeah, traveling around the world like that, learning as much as possible is sort of the ultimate way to be. But now I'm a little more hesitant, and sort of aware of the consequences of those sorts of choices, especially because it is zero sum to some extent. Like, you can either travel around and go to various elite schools and do all this stuff, or you can stay at home and have similar social circles your whole life, but they'll be very deep rooted. And there's something sort of like beautiful about that that I think you don't get if you're traveling around. And then, yeah, I think on that note, a character I would have liked to see, like a true foil, sort of related to what you were saying earlier, Cam, a true foil in this sort of book would have been a character who does precisely that, who sort of, is materially perhaps not as focused as, say, Isabel and Gray and people like that, but stays with those sort of connections throughout their whole life, and seeks sort of the same equanimity that someone like Larry is seeking, but does it by just like really rooting themselves into like one community and staying put. And no one in the book really has that side of them, right? Because everyone is chasing various things. And I thought for a while Isabel might be that sort of character, but she's not quite there, right? There's other things she wants, and she's sort of envious of Larry's life in some sense, or at least of not having Larry.
And she's
Uh,
detached
so
from
yeah.
her children as well. She's like not the greatest mother. She's
Oh,
sort
that's a
of
great
detached
point.
from her family.
So yeah, so no one has quite filled that gap for me, and that would have been an interesting character, I think, in the book to have.
Yeah,
But
Isabel's
yeah.
almost there. But yeah, no, I think you're right. Part of it, I think, is like the social norms or religious customs and stuff. Like when you totally reject all those, it's kind of like the Chesterton's fence thing. And you go do this, there's amazing things, but it's like, well, actually, there is this trade-off that is kind of hard to see sometimes, and sometimes it's like implicit, it's almost implicit knowledge type thing, is sometimes hard to articulate, and we kind of say like community and things like that, and social bonds, which but just how important they are to like the good life that Larry's kind of eschewing, right?
Yeah, so I'm curious to see which way Mom takes it. Like, what happens to Larry in these last two parts? What about you, Rich? You think it would have been sympathetic to his choices when you were younger? I mean, in some sense, the answer must be yes for you, right? Because in some sense, you did a lot of what he did in terms of just picking up and traveling around
You're the
and
Cossie now.
being solo.
Been there, done that.
Well,
Bought the t-shirt in Bangkok.
I think that the big difference between Larry and I, apart from our forearm attractiveness, is like I was interested in material success, and that was a big part of why I left. Because it's not, I didn't leave a super lucrative job. I left a journalism crappy job. But anyway, like most of the things I was trying to figure out were very much self-improvement things, and especially financial independence, life hack type things where I was trying to secure my financial future. I mean, I was reading also a lot of like Scott Alexander and Les Wrongy type stuff and epistemology type stuff for sure. But my primary motivation was like, how can I be clever and amass enough money or lifestyle so that I can escape from having to be a wage slave? So I think that's a less noble motivation. I guess to be fair, like Larry just had that sort of built in right from the outset since he had a little bit of money to live on. And then my love of learning and obsession has come a little bit later on in life, where now it's an end unto itself, whereas a lot of what I used to be reading was like a means to an end, basically. And then I also think that it's hard to put myself in the shoes, but like I think you start falling out of love with Larry pretty quickly in this book, actually. First couple of chapters, hell yeah, he's awesome. But I think pretty soon you find him a little bit icky or unrelatable or something. He's like a bit of a cold fish. I mean, I'm certainly fallen. I've fallen out of love with Larry by this point in the book already. Where I'm like, oh, he's kind of cool, but like, I don't want to emulate that. I don't want to be alone like he's alone. I want to relate to people, and I want
Yeah.
to. I don't know. I probably
I
would
think
have
he's an
stacked
extreme
up with
version, right?
Isabel.
And like Elliot Templeton's an extreme version of total kind of status seeking and the normal kind of material consumption, Babylonian sort of leisure class. And then Larry is this extreme and just totally itinerant and yeah, no material possessions. And I think when you read this book, you kind of want the 10% more Larry, or like 50. You kind of realize, oh, I want to be like 50% more Larry. I want to go in that direction. I don't want to like totally emulate him, you know. And some people will, I suppose. I know one guy who kind of does that. He's not working. He does a little bit of gardening on the side to like pay his rent. He does like the gardening of this big hippie share house. So he doesn't have to pay rent, and he does yoga and he reads and he, yeah. And again, like I kind of get on board with that until he starts talking about some nonsense, and I'm like, well, okay, you're just like smoking acid, doing acid, taking acid, and being nonsensical right now. But when he starts talking wisely, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I can get behind that. Anyway, I'm repeating myself. Yeah.
Yeah. We're running up on time, but there's just one other thing that I wanted to bring up. Just a small thing, which is that the character of Suzanne is really interesting. And what it got me thinking about is it's crazy to me. I didn't quite realize that this was like a whole job, like a type of a job was to be a muse or a mistress to an artist and not just sit for their paintings, but also be kind of like a quasi housemaid and lover, and you know, looking after the sort of material concerns of the artist so that they can focus on the divine or whatever. And then, like, when one artist can't afford to like it, they can't afford to pay for her services anymore, and then she gets like hired by another artist. It's really interesting as a sort of an archetype of a person, of a woman in particular, which I don't know if that really exists anymore. But it clearly seems to have been like a big thing and like kind of an important job in and of itself. So what happened to the muses? And she's described as being really ugly, which is super funny. So it's not even about like having a hot side piece or whatever. It's
She's a bit older,
it's
right?
something more than that.
No, I mean, she started doing it when she was young. She started when she
Yeah,
was
she
17
started
or
when she
something.
was,
Yeah,
yeah,
was
she
she
was a
ugly when she was young?
teenager. I don't
I think they
know.
kind of imply that. I mean,
Yeah,
I don't think she
I
was
think
ever considered a
generally,
great
like, you
beauty.
wouldn't be ugly at age 40, but beautiful at age 18. It doesn't really work like that. If you were a great beauty, you would remain beautiful at age 40. So, yeah, it's definitely not that she was
Online tells me that's
incredibly.
exactly how it works as soon as you hit
Yeah.
27.
What happens? Oh, you hit the wall.
This is something you hit, yeah.
Or it only happens to women, right? Men get more distinguished and
Yeah,
men get,
exactly.
like, cloned up.
Our sexual value peaks at 55 or something.
Yeah. It reminded me of like Tyler Cowen, like these new service sector jobs. And it's like, oh, this is an old, this old job, this old service
Yeah.
sector job that doesn't seem to be a thing anymore.
You can imagine a
Or
Jed Martin painting it along with horse butchers and tobacconists. And...
yeah, exactly. It just feels like this kind of a cool old school. I don't know. There's something I find really romantic and charming about it. And it seems sad that it
There's
doesn't
something kind of
exist anymore.
aristocratic about it as well.
It's kind of, maybe it's empowering. It's like perhaps something that gets lost in modern feminism or something where, I don't know, you're much more than just like their sex partner. You
Yeah. I
are,
mean,
but you are sort of not subservient to them, but certainly like you're in their shadow for sure. The muse is not going to get remembered to the same degree the artist does, but that doesn't mean that it's any less of an important role to hold.
I remember in Midnight in Paris, I think, like Owen Wilson, who's kind of plays the Woody Allen character, goes back, and Marion Cotillard, I think she's Picasso's muse, right? And I think she kind of potentially plays that role. I might be misremembering. And she's kind of this interesting person
Yeah.
and plays an important role for Picasso
Yeah, Picasso
as well.
definitely had a muse.
I think he had a couple.
Yeah,
One or two.
No, but this is distinct from just like, you know, mistress or whatever. I mean, it sort of blurs together a bit, but
One other thing just around I suppose the setting is I was thinking like this movie sort of set in the 20s and the 30s, and like it's set in Paris, and Chicago is like the American city, and it just made me think around like the decline of Chicago as like a major city. And it was sort of known as the second city, and it was really big. And then, like, even like back in the 1990s, there were like all these. I think John Hughes movies, who's like a screenwriter director, like did like Home Alone, a lot of those coming of age, like Pretty in
Breakfast
Pink,
Club.
Breakfast Club, things like that. So like, all set in Chicago, and it kind of felt like, oh man, this is going to be the next New York, or even rivals New York, and fast forward to sort of 2024, and it doesn't feel like that at all. And I know like crime is part of that discussion as well. And but yeah, I think so. This is 20s. When was like the big world fair? That was like early 1900s. Like Chicago won that, and like, they had this big world fair, and it's just like totally major city.
Yeah, the World Expos, do they still have those anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. That's when they got everyone sort of comes from all around the world and has their little stall. Like,
Yeah, pretty
oh,
cool,
it's
man.
like some guy
New
probably in a
Zealand's like, oh, we've come
lotus.
up with a new kind of meringue-based dessert.
This one's lemon.
The mountain gear, but you'd have like some guy like in a lotus position, and like it's, but it kind of felt like sort of in a stall. You could see some Orientalist kind of critiques around it all. There was probably always a bias as well as on those sort of things that I'm getting distracted now. The people that come to them are the people engaging with the West. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. But yeah, just Chicago is a major city.
So, is there anything else that you guys want to mention
No,
before you
I'm pretty
do?
curious to see what happens in these last two parts.
So, we're going to finish the book by
Yeah, I
next week.
reckon. Yeah, well. Yeah.
Easy
Yeah.
peasy.
Well, till
Nice.
next time.
Sweet. See you later, fellas.
All right, see you, boys.